Hello, everyone. Welcome to the second installment of Swing Politics. This is 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. I am your host, Mitchell Saunders, otherwise known as Big Mitch for informally. I'm just going to make sure that I'm going to put the music back on to make sure that everything's still working, and I'll be right on to discuss the very exciting midterm election results. Thanks so much. Stand by. Hello, everyone. I'm back, making sure that everything is good, and it ideally would be now. So as I said before, welcome to the second installment of Swing Politics. It's very exciting, and it is just a little over 24 hours after the polls have closed, and what I'm going to be doing today is breaking down basically all the election results that we know so far, and explaining what I think happened, what I think the Democrats post-mortem, Republicans post-mortem, the election results we have, the election results we're waiting on. It's going to be very exciting. So, let's get right into it. So I think the best place to start with is our House election results. I think that is a great place that we want to begin because shockingly, Democrats didn't do as bad as everyone had thought they did. I remember coming in here last time saying that sure, Democrats were competitive, but that Republicans were gaining. Republicans had momentum. A lot of competitive House districts that Trump had won were completely off the board. Democrats were really focusing on protecting Biden districts. And essentially, what happened was the Democrats kind of defied the odds with a Democratic incumbent president, a Democratic midterm, with an okay economy. Inflation is really very bad, but otherwise, unemployment is very low. And I think GDP is okay. Everything is all right, not great. And of course, there's always the looming Dobbs decision that is hanging over, especially female voters and those of us that have female family members, which is a large majority of the United States. And so what I kind of want to do is go through what we have so far, give you a little bit of an overview, and then go into a little bit of the specifics of where there were some Republican bright spots, as well as largely, shockingly, some Democratic bright spots, and a little bit of agita that redistricting gone better for Democrats. They might have even kept the House, where right now it looks toss-up, but if I were to give it to a party, I'd probably give it to the Republicans. So let's get started on this. I think that a good place to start is where we're at right now. Right now, given called races, I'm looking at the New York Times. I think that they have a very good setup here. There have been 189 districts called for, 189 seats that have been called for the Democrats, and 207 for the Republicans. But it's in these next, it would clearly say that, you know, Republicans are favored, but a lot of the last seats are safe Democratic seats that we're waiting for the mail-in vote to be counted in California. So, of course, the Democratic number is going to boost well before there is likely a called winner of the House. I know NBC is projecting that Republicans could have just a 218 majority, which is essentially not a majority, and every single person in their caucus would hold power, as well as the Democratic caucus. It's a very unprecedented position. I think the last time this happened was, I believe it was like in during the Woodrow Wilson presidency when the House was extremely closely tied. It's extremely unprecedented. So we're kind of, we always want to be back in precedented times. Though for Democrats, and I would say for the nation as a whole, these are very welcome election results. The fact that Democrats were not repudiated, there was more of a repudiation of the sort of far right-ism and the Trumpism. People are tired of that, from what I can tell. And Democrats really, really did well across the board. Some of the districts that we're still waiting on, essentially, Republicans need to win 11 more seats to control at 218. And some of the specific races that we're still waiting on, some of these in the New York Times are a little bit delayed compared to what the Associated Press has called. But we're waiting on especially a lot of Arizona seats, three in particular, Arizona 2nd, Arizona 6, Arizona 1, and a bunch of California districts, especially two where Democrats are hoping to flip, that are Biden plus 10 districts. The House races, if we look at the results that we have, Democrats did so well, essentially across the board, barring realistically two states, and that's New York and Florida. And unfortunately, both of them had maps that were not in the Democrats' favor. Florida, Republicans obviously control the state legislature and the governorship, and they were able to draw a map that gutted three Democratic districts, which was a shame. It was Democrats Stephanie Murphy, Al Lawson, and Charlie Crist, who ended up getting axed. And of course, Val Demings decided to run for that Senate seat. She, of course, did not win. Looking at Democrats in Florida, it was just a mess across the board. Democrats were doing worse there than they were doing in competitive Trump districts. It's truly a testament to how Florida has gone. If you look at the governor's race in Florida, DeSantis won by 20. Rubio won by 16. This is not a competitive state anymore. And I think that in 2024, Democrats and Republicans will likely be triaging this state in funding, in presidential advertising type of situation and organizing. I mean, it's shocking to think that when Obama won the state 2008, 2012, that almost every single presidency in the modern era that we can think of, it all comes down to Florida. And it is officially, I would say, for the foreseeable future, gone for the Democratic Party. And I don't know, I think that might be a better thing for the Democrats to not have to focus on that state as a reach, because it doesn't do them any good. I found that there's better places to put resources, funding, fundraising, organizing, and Florida just seems like every time is unsuccessful. Now, the other somewhat shocking Democratic shellacking, I would argue that Democrats did extremely poorly, was in New York. And of course, we know at the top of the ticket in New York was Chuck Schumer and Kathy Hochul. Chuck Schumer is, of course, very beloved by New Yorkers. He has done extremely well in prior elections. Most of the time, Schumer's gotten just under 60% of the vote, or over 60% of the vote, which is very admirable, a really good result. Weirdly enough, in this election, he did underperform. I think he underperformed what everyone thought he would. This is I don't quite know how much Biden won the state by. I believe it was somewhere, and looking it up real fast, that Biden won the state by 23%. 23% is significant. Chuck Schumer won it by, or is with the votes tallied up, probably will be end up being around 14. Which is a pretty big underperformance for the Senate Majority Leader, who's been in this seat since he flipped it from Paul D'Amato in, I believe, 2016, 2010, 2004. I think it was 98 or 92. I believe it was 98. So that was pretty much a shock to Democrats. And Kathy Hochul even performed worse. People were talking about how good of a campaign Lee Zeldin was running. Lee Zeldin was is a current sitting representative from Long Island. He vacated the seat to run for governor, and with 94% of the vote in, which is by no means over, but it is clear enough that Hochul has won. She only won by 4.8%, which is one of the largest underperformances in the nation, I would argue right now, if not the biggest underperformance in a Biden plus 23 state, which is it's embarrassing, quite frankly. And you'd think that Hochul, as signing into the books a lot of pro-choice legislation, election legislation, and acting as a very strong Democrat after taking over for Cuomo, that was not the case. And every single county in the state shifted right in both Schumer's race as well as Hochul's race. And the problem with this was, although those two did win, and it's still a Democratic state, the problem was down ballot. Democrats in New York single-handedly gave Republicans, should they get the majority, of the majority. You could say that about any state, but realistically, Democrats lost five competitive House seats in this state alone. That's unfathomable. That's a huge, huge Republican victory. I think everyone would point to this as, had they just seen the House election results from New York and nothing else, you'd assume this election would have been a red wave hands down. It's weird. This is a weird midterm, and I'm going to be going through how weird it is. But the fact that there were Republican waves in Florida and New York and elsewhere, it was Democratic overperformances, says a lot of good things for I think the nation. I'm a very pessimistic person when it comes to politics, and this midterm has given me a lot of hope. Even if the Republicans take the House, if they flip the House by the slimmest of majorities, this is a true repudiation against Trumpism and election denialism. People are tired. Personally, maybe when Trump comes back in, we'll see. It provides the Democrats an opening where the Republican Party could end up splitting in a way where Republican insiders and establishment might say, we're done with Trump, we're done with election denialism. It clearly doesn't work. And Trump is still an extremely important part of the party that has a majority of the electorate supporting him, the Republican electorate. So, and also it proves that candidate quality really does matter. Kathy Hochul was perceived and turned out to be a very weak candidate, whereas we'll get to other governor's races and other Senate races, that Democrats just blew it out of the water. And it was shocking. It was just unbelievable to see. So let's go through some of the New York election results. I think we can go from, upstate to downstate in terms of the close races. In District 25, it was a Biden plus 20 district. Democrats won it by around 8. Democrats still won the district. That's the Rochester-based district. Essentially, the seats that Democrats lost, in that Republicans flipped them or Republicans held them, were won by very slim majorities. It was 51-49 across the board. This was District 22, the Syracuse-based district in New York. It's Biden plus 8. The Republican is very likely to win. It's not over yet. It hasn't been called yet, but it is leaning in their direction. Mark Molinaro in District 19, he had lost the special election against Pat Ryan just right after the Dobbs decision in New York 18. The Hudson Valley really did go very hard for Republicans, which is a little shocking because the argument that Lee Zeldin made, and Lee Zeldin was at the top of the ticket, was that he's the tough on crime candidate and Republicans are tough on crime. So you'd think that if it worked in New York, it would work in other places. But the Hudson Valley is not a location that is riddled with crime. This is an area that is suburban, more as you go more upstate, it's more rural suburban. If you go down, it's obviously more urban-y. But this is not, like the heart of a city. This is not a high crime location. It's a very safe area. So the fact that if it was the sort of tough on crime stance that really handed Republicans the success in New York, you'd think that it would hand them success in other suburban locations across the nation, which is why it's a little perplexing why Lee Zeldin overperformed so heavily. And I think that the postmortem on that for New York Democrats is going to reveal a lot. But quite frankly, I don't think they know. And I certainly do not know. If we're looking at election results from the Hudson Valley again, Pat Ryan, who was the person that won the special election earlier in August, seems to have just held on to his seat. It's not for sure, but this is a relatively close district, but it seems like the Democrat has won. I think the Associated Press called it, though New York Times has not. The big upset was New York 17. New York 17 is Upper Westchester County, Rockland County, which swung hard against the Democrats. And the DCCC chair, Sean Patrick Maloney, lost, which is the first time since 1980 that's happened. They've been defeated in a general election. Now, Sean Patrick Maloney, I have a little bit of a bone to pick with him because I am rather biased. I worked for Mondaire Jones on the Hill over the summer, who was a very good representative at catering to his constituents, knowing what they wanted, being progressive, but also being understanding of his electorate, being understanding, especially of the Jewish community. He was very much aware of the rise in anti-Semitism and made that a big part of his platform, which I think in New York, in the former New York 17, appreciated, especially me as one of his constituents, soon to be former constituents. But Sean Patrick Maloney, after the redistricting, New York Democrats' gerrymander got struck down by the New York Court of Appeals, which was appointed with a majority of Cuomo appointees. This, you could argue, was Cuomo's last laugh, stated that this partisan gerrymander was against the state constitution, which has a provision in it that prevents against gerrymandering for any purpose, of course, racial or otherwise, but especially for partisan bias as well. And the redrawing of the map put Sean Patrick Maloney in a district where he represented 25% of it. And although he was drawn in, he could have easily ran in the district north of him, which he actually represented 75% of, and would have allowed Mondaire Jones to run in New York 17th. And had that happened, it's quite possible that Maloney would have, though there was a little bit of a situation because Pat Ryan had won the special election, so it would have been a little bit different of what would have happened. But I argue that Mondaire Jones would have been a much better candidate because those were his constituents in New York 17. And instead, with the DCCC chair, his job is to elect the most number of Democrats. Instead, what he did is he kicked out one of his own party members in this district, which is abhorrent for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee chair to do. So the fact that he lost is a testament to the failure of the New York Democrats, to himself. For somewhat carpetbagging, not necessarily. He was drawn into the district, but I think there should have been more agreement within the Democratic Party. And also, the Democratic Party, the state Democratic Party, for approving the Cuomo appointees to the Court of Appeals. I think the New York Dems really, really messed up in this case. And Lee Zeldin's overperformance, because he was from Long Island, leached into New York 4, New York 4 and New York 3, both of which are Biden plus 10, Biden plus 15 districts that Republicans flipped. No one saw that coming. If you looked at that and extrapolated those results to the nation, you are assuming Republicans are winning upwards of 230 seats. And that is entirely not the case. Had Democrats had their stuff together, had they been organized, we could be looking at a Democratic House majority guaranteed. Instead, it's unlikely. Though it's shockingly still in play. So now that we've gone through the Republican bright spots, which I'm sure as I keep going through the states, there will be a little bit more. Let's get to the highlights for the Democratic Party, which is quite a lot of election results that the Democrats have to be happy about. So starting in New England, in Maine, Jared Golden, who's running in a Trump plus 7 district, seems to have won, is likely to win his district. He's leading 48-45. Maine has immediate runoff ranked choice voting. So the top two vote getters will immediately go to a runoff where the third choice or anyone below will rank their ballots for who they feel that they would want if their candidate doesn't win. they would that those votes would go to their party of second choice. So Jared Golden is leading 48, Bruce Poliquin is at 45, and Tiffany Bond, who's an independent, is running at 7%. So that 7% is going to those 7% of voters are a lot of them have ranked either Jared Golden or Bruce Poliquin as their second choice. And that their votes will go to either of them. And the fact that Golden is sitting at 48 now is a very good sign that he's likely to hold on, which is great for the Democrats. Of course, every single seat counts right now in this hotly contested race for the majority. And Jared Golden was a very good candidate at catering to a Trump plus seven district. He voted against the Build Back Better bill, and he voted against, I don't believe he voted against the infrastructure bill, but certain pieces of legislation that he knew wouldn't sit well with his constituency, and he has proven that he can sort of accept those votes because he deserves them. And I think that the district also got a point bluer in redistricting, which is always helpful. But that's a good example of candidate quality. He is a quality candidate, which is a very funny way of saying that. And I think that he's likely to hold that seat for a little bit, winning in this really weird Democratic incumbent year. So good for him. Democrats winning in New Hampshire. They won. Chris Pappas was thought to be somewhat competitive. He ended up winning by 8% against Caroline Leavitt, who was a real big election denier, real radical. People were very worried about her. And Pappas knocked it out of the park. In terms of the Rhode Island 2, that it was largely discussed that Alan Fung was the mayor of Cranston. It was a relatively Democratic town, and that he was a huge Republican overperformer. And I will grant that Alan Fung is a very good candidate. This election result is 50-47 for the Democrat in Rhode Island 2. This is not the Providence district. It's the rest of Rhode Island, and this is a Biden plus, I believe it's around a Biden plus 10 district, and for or maybe a little bit more. And for Alan Fung to come within 5 points, to be at within 3 points, is really impressive for a Republican. Unfortunately, it doesn't matter. And I think that as we go through these results, you'll see that Republicans are facing the election results where they're losing by a hair, which is in the House, and they're losing by a hair, but they're likely to win the House. Whereas in 2020, Democrats lost a lot of elections by a hair, but they retained the majority. So, weird reversal situation. Connecticut 5 is a really close race between Johanna Hayes and George Logan. The Democrat seems likely to pull it out there. I think a huge bright spot was Pennsylvania. Of course, we know at the top of the ticket was Josh Shapiro and John Fetterman. You can't get better candidates than those two, and at the same time, you can't get worse Republican candidates, excuse me. Doug Mastriano, everyone knows he is an election denier, far right, making a lot of very, very upsetting statements about Jewish people and Jewish community and everything along those lines. Too radical for Republicans. And I'm going to go to the state results here to see what the final margin looks like. And Shapiro ended up winning by nearly 14%. And to give you a gauge, that's more than Bob Casey. Bob Casey's the incumbent senator from Pennsylvania. He's been there, I believe, two terms now. He was elected in 2006. That's more than Bob Casey is beloved by Pennsylvania, and that's more than what he won by. Bob Casey won by 12.5% in 2018, which was a Democratic wave. And Josh Shapiro outperformed him. I think Josh Shapiro is a great candidate. He's the sitting attorney general for the state of Pennsylvania. Doug Mastriano is a really bad candidate. The combined two of those, that was a storm for the Republicans. And for that being at the top of the ticket for Democrats, I'm going to go through some of these election results. It's going to shock you. John Fetterman, of course, my words are not being processed. The fact that John Fetterman, a Democrat in a state that leans 3 points to the right of the nation against a Trump endorsed candidate, won in a Biden midterm, the first Biden midterm. This is actually, I believe, the first time a Senate race has been flipped. I know this is the first time Democrats will be Pennsylvania will be represented by two Democrats for the first time in what I believe is 40, 50 years in the Senate, at least. And Fetterman did not win this by a small. This was not an eek. Isn't that by the skin of his teeth? He's currently leading by 3.8%. That's well more than Biden won it by, well more than what Trump won it by in 2016. That's closer to, I don't think it's close to an Obama margin, but that is a commanding victory. That's he's winning by over 200,000 votes. If you are a Democrat, you are looking at this campaign and you are wondering what went right. You know, Fetterman was dealing with the stroke, and he was very much sort of counted out towards the end a little bit. It was always going to be a competitive race, but people were saying Oz's numbers are looking good, his momentum is looking up, and Fetterman just knocked it out of the park. And you can look in terms of the swings where Fetterman got his numbers from comparing 2020 numbers to 2022, it was largely, the biggest swings were in the rurals. And of course, Pittsburgh. You can't, Fetterman is from Pittsburgh. I believe he was born and raised there. And Allegheny County, where Pittsburgh is located, the Democratic machine there is so strong that he outperformed Biden in Allegheny by 7.5%. And this is a county that has 600,000, in this case, it was around 550,000 voters, upwards of 550,000 voters. In a state that's electing, Fetterman got 2.5 million and or 2.7 million and Oz got around 2.5 million. That's a pretty big chunk of votes there to swing that hard. And the New York Times estimates that his, I believe the New York Times is estimating that Fetterman will win by even more. I think he's going to win by about four. There was also an idea that Oz would be better in the suburbs, and that just did not materialize. Though there was less of a leftward shift in the suburbs, Fetterman still overperformed Biden, the king of the suburbs, by 3.4% in Berks County, 1.5% in Montgomery, 2.1% in Lancaster, and then you compare it to something like Cameron County, which is just a ruby red county, and it went 10 points more to Fetterman. I mean, you can't run a better campaign. You can't. Every single person should be looking at his digital team, his ground team. This is a candidate that, though he might not be presidential material, we'll see. He is unquestionably one of the most successful Democrats from this decade. I would argue you could put him up there with Barack Obama. Him and Josh Shapiro. And it was crazy to watch those election results roll in. But that's not all that went right for Pennsylvania Democrats. If you're looking at these House races, Matt Cartwright, who is from Pennsylvania 8, he's in the sort of Scranton-y, northeast Pennsylvania area. This is a place that Democrats have been leeching a lot of voters over the past, 10, 20 years or so. And Cartwright held on. This is a Trump plus, I believe, Trump plus 2.5% district. And Cartwright's ahead by two. Cartwright was a notoriously strong incumbent. He's been there for a long time. They know him very well. And he is a much more moderate candidate, which caters well to that district. Someone that was way more shocking was Susan Wild. Susan Wild was in a district that for sure everyone had said it's lean Republican. And Susan Wild's winning by 2%. This is the district just below Matt Cartwright's in Pennsylvania 7. The Pittsburgh machine obviously turned out well for another competitive district, District 17. The Pennsylvania Democrats are just ecstatic. You can't have a better night. You just can't. So holding on, Democrats held on to every single competitive seat in the Biden midterm in Pennsylvania. Extremely, extremely impressive. And not only that, but Democrats are likely favored to take the state house. If you told a Democratic operative, Republican operative, any single pundit in Pennsylvania that Democrats would be taking the state house in 2022, flipping it from the Republicans, they'd laugh in your face. Of course, the Democrat is a governor. The state Senate is a little bit more gerrymandered in favor of the Republicans. It's less gerrymandered than it is just sort of how the votes lie. So Democrats won't clinch that. They won't gain a trifecta. But even having one chamber at State House, they haven't held it, I think, since Obama's first, since 2008. 2010 was the last time I think they held it. I'm already at 3:30, and I'm just at Pennsylvania, so I might need to go a little bit faster through this. And I think I'm going to go hit some of the highlights, run through them real fast. Michigan 7, Michigan 8. Democrats flip Michigan 3. Democrats have gained a trifecta in the state legislature in Michigan for the first time since 1983. The Independent Redistricting Commission that was passed by the people in 2020, or maybe it was 2018, made a very fair state Senate and state House map that Democrats won, and Gretchen Whitmer was reelected with Obama 2012 margins in the state. Another bright spot. I mean, if you look at all the governorships, Tony Evers was reelected in Wisconsin, though it's a shame that Ron Johnson was reelected by such a small margin. It was relatively expected. In fact, people thought he'd win by more. If you're looking at Illinois, every single district that Illinois Democrats drew to ensure that they would win those districts won, even the one in the Driftless region with Eric Sorensen versus Esther Joy King. This is in the northwest column of Illinois. The Democrat won. The Democrat was not expected to win this. Joy King had, I would say it's more of a toss-up. Joy King had a big fundraising advantage. Polls were looking iffy. I think if you were to give the night to one person, I think it would be from Ohio, Marcy Kaptur. And I think Tim Ryan deserves applause. Tim Ryan lost, but he overperformed. And him being at the top of the ticket allowed Democrats to hold the most number of seats in Ohio since 2010, before the 2010 elections. Marcy Kaptur is from Ohio 9. She's in the Toledo-based district. This is a Trump plus 3 district. And her opponent was notoriously bad. He lied about his deployment status, where he was deployed, what he did in the military. Pretty far-right candidate. And Marcy Kaptur, the Democrat, incumbent Democrat, I believe she will now be, during this term, the longest-serving woman in the House ever, won by 14%. So I love this election result, not only because Marcy Kaptur is a great representative and she's a Democrat, but what's bigger is that candidate quality matters. That's what this election tells us, which I love. I love to hear that, because this was a little bit of a repudiation, and by a little bit, I don't know if it's a little, it might be a lot. I think we have to wait for the votes to kind of shake out, but this was not the Republican midterm that everyone thought it would be, and people woke up and they listened. It was abortion. It was threats to democracy. Maybe it was gun control, probably less so. But it was exhaustion with Trump. And I think that might be a little bit of an MSNBC point, but at the same time, I think it rings very true. If you're looking at, other bright spots, North Carolina Democrats flipped an open district that I believe went to Biden by 0.2. Democrats for sure were not expecting to have this. Unfortunately, in North Carolina and Ohio, Republicans flipped the state Supreme Court to allow themselves to draw gerrymanders that will probably gut Democrats around five or six seats going into 2024, which is going to be tough for them to make back those seats, to take back those seats, to sort of clinch a majority in 2024. I think it's a shame. Democrats statewide are still plagued by Republicans doing decent in North Carolina, but Democrats never being able to win. Cherry Beasley ran a great campaign, I think. She lost by 4 in a Republican, what should have been a Republican year in a Republican plus 5 state. It's a very admirable result, unfortunately. And she for sure pulled Wiley Nickel in North Carolina 13 over the edge for the Democrats. The statewide state Supreme Court election results, which were really important, were just, it wasn't going to happen. And this is the North Carolina plague for Democrats. And unfortunately, it's a plague for Democrats, nationally. Looking at some other states that I'm going to highlight, Texas the southern to the Rio Grande Valley, South Texas districts for Henry Cuellar and Vicente Gonzalez. The two of them held on. I think Democrats had a stronger than expected time performance with Latinos. I think that they expect Latinos and Hispanics. I think there was more of an expectation that they would be swinging more to the right than they did. I think there was, with regard to the numbers for Texas, I know turnout was not what Democrats had hoped for. I know that that Abbott won. These were all expected results. But Democrats held their own in the Rio Grande Valley, which I think is a very good thing. I think that the fact that they did this can stop the bleeding with those very crucial Latino and Hispanic voters. Democrats flipped a seat in New Mexico, too. They were not supposed to. Democrats did a great job at redistricting the state to make all three seats Biden districts, and it paid off. Democrats won New Mexico, too. They flipped it. Now Democrats hold all three seats in New Mexico. Shockingly, Democrats are likely to win Colorado 8. Colorado 8 is a Republican trending district that was drawn in by the Independent Commission in Colorado. And even notably in Colorado, Jared Polis, the sitting governor, was elected by 17 points. And everyone says, you know, everyone says, oh, look at the commanding lead for Ron DeSantis in Florida. He won by 20 points. Crazy. Jared Polis won by 17. Colorado in 2012 was more, I believe, more to the right of the nation than Florida. I don't think that's exactly right. But Florida and Colorado were deemed as equally as competitive. And the fact that a Democratic governor was reelected by 17 points in a Biden midterm, and people aren't hailing Polis as being presidential contender. I mean, it's the media that spins that. It's the whole, they love Trump so much and they, you know, want to talk about Trump, but they want to talk about DeSantis too as the next rising star and the infighting, and, you know, the resistors eat that up. But getting back to the election results, Lauren Boebert is in the fight of her life. I believe there is right now 60 votes separating Adam Frisch, the Democrat, from Lauren Boebert, the far right Republican representing rural Colorado. Shocking. This, if the Democrat wins this, it's a major upset. And obviously that seat is rented. He's on rented time before 2024. But right now, when the majority is going to be made up of maybe two seats, crazy. Crazy to see Lauren Boebert lose that and to have a Democrat win that state. Be really interesting if Colorado Democrats have a 6-2 delegation. Arizona is a little bit more unfortunate for the Democrats in terms of House races. There are three that are leaning towards the Republicans. Democrats, there's an independent redistricting commission there that Democrats kind of got a little bit shafted with. Unfortunately, it's unlikely that they are to win those three seats. Of course, still possible that Democrats could win. Tom O'Halloran is a Democrat running in rural Arizona, and he's holding his own, but probably isn't enough. In Nevada, 4-1-3, Nevada had a Democratic gerrymander that was conducted by the state legislature and signed off by Steve Sisolak, the governor. And it seems to have paid off in that Democrats are likely to hold all three seats that are marginal Biden seats. They tend to run from about Biden plus 6 to Biden plus 8, and Democrats are likely to hold all three. Then those incumbents are Stephen Horsford, Dina Titus, and Susie Lee. Susie Lee being in the closest race, and she is still favored. California, I'm going to end it off with, I guess, California and Washington. We're still waiting on some results. There's an upset that might be brewing in Washington 3 for a major extremist that primaried Herrera Butler. That, I don't know if that's exactly how you pronounce her name, but she was a long-time serving representative from Washington, the Washington coast, and there might be an upset. Jamie Herrera Butler, which would be shocking. Democrats are looking good in Washington 8. Oregon, the three competitive Oregon districts that Democrats thought for sure was going to be gone, as well as the fact that the Oregon governor's race was deemed as competitive because of the independent candidate that Democrat was running. A Democrat was drawn out of her state legislatorial seat, and she decided to instead run for the governor's race against a fellow Democrat on the independent party. And everyone said, this is not good. You know, the Republican might be likely to win. And what was her name? Kotek, Tina Kotek, the Speaker of the State House, ended up pulling it out, and Democrats will maintain that trifecta, which is huge. I'd like to point out that I completely forgot to mention Democrats gained a trifecta in Minnesota. So, Democrats can pass progressive legislation in Minnesota, Michigan. They can govern with no worry. I think that our margins majorities tight, yes, but they can do it. I think if there's anyone that proves that a majority can be tight and things can still get done, it's Nancy Pelosi. We are waiting on a lot of California districts. I can't even talk about them because there's so little reporting. Things are looking very interesting. Things are looking confusing. Things are looking strange. We don't know what that is going to be. We don't know how Democrats are going to fare. Who knows? I think that the race for the House is a toss-up. If I were to give it to someone, again, I'm going to give it to Republicans. But that being said, you cannot look at this night and say Democrats did poorly. They outperformed expectations on a vast scale. Winning seats that were Trump districts, winning seats that were marginal Biden seats, losing the ones that they were of course, slated to lose. I can't see this as anything other than, especially with a lot of far-right candidates underperforming or losing or being in the fight of their lives, that this is anything but good for the Democratic Party, bad for the Republican Party, and that this could be, some were saying, this could be more of a postmortem required in 2022 for this midterm than there was required for 2012. But both chambers are not done, and although I've gone through the House, the Senate is still up for grabs. The Senate's a little easier to go through. There's fewer competitive seats, and of course I've gone through some of them. But we're looking at a runoff in Georgia. I think, quite frankly, out of all of the candidates, given how well Democrats did nationwide, I truly think that out of all of them, Herschel Walker performed the best. That's my opinion. In that the fact that he's forcing Warnock to a runoff, I was thinking that Warnock would be able to win outright given the situation, and that wasn't the case. The flip in Pennsylvania, Democrats need to win Nevada and Arizona to win the election, to win the Senate, to hold the Senate. They are favored to do so. Although right now it seems as though the Republicans are leading in Nevada, Adam Laxalt, the former attorney general and 2018 governor's nominee, is leading by 3% against Cortez Masto, a total of about 20,000 votes. And votes have been trickling in. There have been many drops tonight that have been very good for Cortez Masto. I'm going to do a little quick Twitter check to see what I'm looking at here in terms of any big batches that have been dropped. But this is a Democratic tilting state right now, and Nevada is the sort of decider, essentially. Mark Kelly in Arizona is favored right now. I think it's super hard to talk about these races and say what the prediction is because there's so much that's still out there. In Arizona, the vote is a lot more confusing. There's a lot more election day votes that are also being counted with mail-in ballots. But when you look at when you're looking at the Nevada race, you know that the rest of the votes are urban mail-in votes, which are, you can't get more, you know, Democratic than that in Nevada. There is a crucial county in Nevada called Washoe County. This is where Reno is located, and it sort of tends to be a bellwether. And from what I understand, though it's not updated on the New York Times page, Cortez Masto has taken a lead in that county with the latest drop of mail-in ballots. Cortez Masto is also the first Latina ever elected to the U.S. Senate, and she is looking better and better by the second, given these election drops. I think that in terms of what we're looking at right now as a breakdown, I would also like to mention that Nevada and Arizona also have governorship races that are happening. Cortez Masto and Kelly, the two senators' races, are running ahead of their Democratic counterparts. Steve Sisolak, the Democratic governor in Nevada, is running well behind Cortez Masto. From what I've heard, Cortez Masto is leading and likely to win. I think not likely. Likely is way too far, but it's tilting in her direction. The mail-in ballots are proving a pattern that is beneficial to her. But until she has taken the lead, she cannot win. Steve Sisolak might be in a closer race. By might, we mean for sure, and that it's been tilting towards the Republican Joe Lombardo. Democrats have a grapple hold on the state legislature in Nevada after redistricting. Democrats made good use of their state legislature to enshrine their power. So it's not as if the Republicans are able to pass whatever they want. But a Republican governor is still, you know, a Republican in the executive office of that state. And in Arizona, Carrie Lake is... the governor running well ahead of Blake Masters, who is the Republican nominee for Arizona. Interestingly enough, the Democrats are doing very well in other statewide races in Arizona, and one of them notably is the Secretary of State. Secretary of State, of course, handles voting for Arizona. And also, weirdly enough, Arizona, I believe, is one of the only states, if not the only state, other than maybe Nebraska, that doesn't have a lieutenant governor, which means that Democrats, which means that if Democrats win the Secretary of State race, Carrie Lake wins the Republican race for governor, Democrats are the second in line to take the governorship, which is why Carrie Lake wouldn't be able to be chosen for, say, a VP contendership for Donald Trump or for any other candidate, or for her to run for presidency herself. She wouldn't be able to, or she would be far more unlikely to do that, because then she would have to vacate the position, and the position would then be filled by a Democrat. His name, I believe, is Adrian Fontes. He's up 52-48. And if we're looking at the race right now for Hobbs versus Lake, it's like 50-50. Hobbs is leading by less than a point. Compare that to Mark Kelly, who's leading by 5. So Hobbs is underperforming. And again, what I think is so interesting about this election is that it proves, it really, really points towards candidate quality mattering, and it mattering a lot. Katie Hobbs was not a good candidate. She refused to do a debate. Even John Fetterman did a debate, and that debate was an absolute catastrophe for him. That being said, Hobbs refused to do a debate. She was very much not in the limelight, and she felt that she could kind of skate by. Carrie Lake, meanwhile, was much more liked by the Republicans. There were a lot by the Republican Party, by independents. They saw her as more as appealing, in that she was very put together. She was a former anchor. She knew how to stump. She knew how to campaign. And I think that's where Hobbs sort of fell back, especially compared to Mark Kelly. And comparing, I guess, Katie Hobbs to Mark Kelly. There's about a point difference in terms of what the Democrat is getting in these races. So Mark Kelly's getting 51.4%, Katie Hobbs is getting 50.4%. So it's a 1% difference. The big difference is in the Republicans. In the Senate race, there is a Libertarian that's received 2.1% of the vote, and Blake Masters, who's the Republican running for the Senate race, has 46.4% compared to Carrie Lake, who is 49.6%, which is about over 3%, 3.2%. Difference, and Carrie Lake is benefiting from that. In terms of the state legislature, I think a lot is still up for grabs. I'm not entirely certain what is to happen in the state legislature. I think it's leaning towards Republicans in both. I don't think there's enough information for really for anything to be determined. But if I were to guess, I think the best case scenario for Democrats is they win Arizona. It's very likely that Mark Kelly's going to pull this out in Arizona, which is great. That brings Democrats up to 49. If the mail-in batches keep coming in well for Cortez Masto, that's it for her. She wins, and Democrats take 50 seats in the Senate. 50 seats is aggravating, super, super annoying to deal with that, but it's 50. It's a majority. It's no room for error, but it's a majority. Unfortunately, I think what's a little odd is that Warnock is probably hoping that Cortez Masto doesn't win. Because if Cortez Masto doesn't win, then the fate of the Senate comes down to Warnock. And that makes Democrats more likely to turn out to ensure that Democrats hold the Senate. Whereas if Kelly and Cortez Masto win, there's less of an impetus for Democrats to turn out. They have the Senate. Maybe Democrats don't feel like voting as much. Maybe independents want to swing more towards the Republican. It feels as though there is no situation in which Democrats get 50, get more than 50. They're not going to get 51 seats. I don't think that there's any circumstance in which that is the case. Is it possible? It's unlikely. Yes, it's unlikely, though. Murkowski is likely to win in Alaska, given the ranked choice voting that's going to happen there, though that'll take a few weeks. And also in the House race, Mary Peltola is up to 47% of the first ranked ballot. So she's for sure going to win. She's an electoral juggernaut. I see her running for Senate someday. Let's maybe look at some of the other governor's races, that I think, maybe I should have spent more time on the House races. I have a whole 8 minutes to keep discussing. Big win for the Democrats was the governorship in Kansas. Kansas is weirdly looking good for Democrats. It's trending in the right direction. It's been trending left, I believe, since Obama in 2012. The big result here was that Sharice Davids, the representative from Kansas 3, who her district was brought down a little bit. It was brought down to a Biden plus 4.5, won by 13 points. And I think that's also really interesting because the New York Times Siena poll that was just 2 weeks or a week prior to this election had her up that exact margin. Maybe it was 12, maybe it was 13 or 14, but it was well within the margin of error. They got it spot on. And I think this was a very good year for polling. It's very interesting. 2016, terrible for polling. 2018, great. 2020, terrible. 2022, very good. Very good. There was a little bit of a Republican bias. I think this is the first time since 2012. If I am not mistaken, this is the first time since 2012 that there has been nationally at least, a polling bias in favor of the Democrats. Polling bias against the Republicans. And in the governor's race in Kansas, the Democrats held on. Laura Kelly, who won in 2018 by about 5%, hung on by 1.5%, which is a very respectable margin. She won by about 15,000 votes. Unfortunately, from what I've heard, the state legislature in Kansas is a Republican supermajority, that they've gained that. And that means that Laura Kelly's veto becomes not very useful. Now, Republicans in Kansas have a tough time sticking together. There's a little bit of a difference between the more conservative and the more moderate. But regardless, they can pull together the votes should they need to. In Maine, Democrats won the governorship by 12%. I think what I'd like to look at is Michigan. Again, Gretchen Whitmer won her governorship, and carried over the line the entirety of the state house and the state senate by over 10 points. She won with 54.5% of the vote in a Biden midterm. She was a candidate that ran on abortion rights. I believe she has two daughters, she made this the hallmark of her campaign. It wasn't, sure, was it focusing on infrastructure? Yeah. Was it focusing on education and ensuring that the economy was strong and addressing, the election denialism? Yes. But abortion was her hallmark. And I think Tudor Dixon was a horrible candidate. And I think that maybe we would have seen a different election result had James Craig won the nomination so long ago. It feels like an eons ago. James Craig was the former police chief for Detroit, and he would have been the Republican nomination, but he didn't get enough signatures to be on the ballot that were valid. Regardless, I still think Whitmer would have won. Maybe she wouldn't have carried across the line her state legislature, but Whitmer's overperformance and the poor candidate quality, the great candidate quality of Democrats, the poor candidate quality for Dixon and for Republicans had a down ballot effect that was so strong that Democrats can do whatever they want in the legislature. And I don't mean do whatever they want in a derogatory way. I mean that they have the power. They've gained the majority, which was unexpected. The state house, in terms of partisan difference, it has 56 Trump seats and 54 Biden seats. And Democrats won. New Mexico, Democrats won again, the governorship by about 6%. Tony Evers won by a crazy margin in Wisconsin. He won. Tony Evers was reelected with, 3.4%, by 3.4%, almost around 100,000 votes that he won by. And if I'm thinking back on Wisconsin election results, the last person that performed that well, or even close to, or the last person that performed, I believe, won the state by like more than 3%, was either Scott Walker in 2014, which was a very strong Republican year, or it was Obama in 2012. No, I'm wrong. It was Tammy Baldwin ended up winning. Tammy Baldwin won in 2018. Tammy Baldwin won by 11% in 2018. Scratch that point. However, Tony Evers won, and Democrats held off Republicans from gaining a supermajority in the state legislature. Unfortunately, the state legislature is extremely gerrymandered due to the state Supreme Court approving the same gerrymander that had been from the decade prior. And although Democrats won the two-party vote for the state house, they are likely to have around 37, 38% of it. It's rather upsetting. Democracy has died in Wisconsin. But it's around for now in the states, I think, which is a huge deal. If I'm going to give some closing remarks with my last 2 minutes, I would say that Democrats have to take this election and run with it in terms of putting their best candidates forward, putting moderate candidates forward in marginal districts, which is what was proven to be proper here. Focusing on issues that matter. I don't really know what that means. But I think this is a repudiation of far rightism. This is not a grant to say Democrats keep the House to govern extremely left wing. These were votes against Republicans. These were not votes for Democrats, and that's okay. Democrats benefited from that, but that doesn't work every election. And I think going into 2024, Democrats have to keep that in mind. But in everything, unless your name is, unless your state is New York or Florida or maybe California, we'll see. Democrats had a phenomenal night. They had, in a Biden midterm, this never happens. This is a defying the odds situation. And in the Senate, I'm inclined to believe that, Democrats will hold, Arizona and Nevada. I don't know what will happen in the runoff. Arguably, it doesn't matter. Cortez Masto looks strong with the dumps, the mail-in dumps that have happened. Same with the ones from Maricopa County. The governorships are a little bit more of a toss-up. I believe Kari Lake will likely win. But Democrats should be applauding themselves. Even if the DCCC chair lost, Democrats should really should be very, very proud of themselves with this election. Republicans should be very aware of the threat that the far right has on their party and that it has on the electorate. And I think that's very clear from these election results. Next time I will be sure to analyze more with regard to these midterm results and see what's in store for the next set of days. So.